This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
Wow, you sure did. Good afternoon. My name's Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hope you're having a very good and safe Tuesday. Hopefully you're not snowed in. Hopefully you haven't hurt yourself shoveling. Hopefully wherever you've needed to go, you've gotten there safely. Hopefully you're not tweeting wet meteorologists. I was going to call them weather people. Then I found out today they don't like to be called weather people. They like to be referred to as meteorologists. Don't tweet nasty things to meteorologists because we didn't get as much snow as we were told. We have a lot to get to today. You'll hear from Barry Larkin, who is joining the Reds TV crew on Fox Sports Ohio. That coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Travis Steele, as well as the Musketeers, get set to take the court in New York against St. John's. But it's Tuesday, which means we start the show by chatting with our friend Paul Daner Jr., who is normally in studio, but because of the snow and all hell breaking loose, Paul is joining me today over the phone. How are you?
Doing good, Mo. You know, I gotta say, like, sometimes I know Barry Larkin has been very accessible and he's around more since he's retired, and you know, he's down at spring training and he's ripping around the team a little bit. The idea that I'm going on before Barry Larkin is just so embarrassing in my own mind. Like, I grew up here. I grew up in this town, and when I was younger, he was in his prime, and I wore number 11 and tried to play shortstop in PYO, right? Like, this is ridiculous. Can you just put him on and just kick me off already?
We can, but no, that would be in violation of the typical Tuesday format. That's how much we have to adhere to the script. It's also an indicator of how much we revere you. And if we give the audience Barry Larkin now, then you know they're going to go away. The idea is to tell them, hey, sit through this stuff, sit through me and Paul, and then if the payoff is going to be for you doing that, you're going to get some Hall of Famer Barry Larkin. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here.
I'm the bad opening act. I'm the fishbone of this show right now. Like, you know, it's just like, oh, can we these guys get off the stage and, you know, bring on Pearl Jam?
Here's what I'm dealing with right now when it comes to Barry Larkin. You and I often talk about stuff that's happening on Twitter. And so I sent out a tweet that basically said, I thought Barry was pretty good. He was on MLB Network for a few years. I think he was one of their first ever hires. And then he was on ESPN on Baseball Tonight. He did some Little League World Series. I think he might have even done some College World Series. And I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was all right. Maybe not the greatest broadcaster in the history of the medium, but I thought he was good, and so I'm looking forward to hearing how he does calling the games of a team that he has long represented and starred for and grew up with. And I expressed this sentiment on Twitter, and then somebody hit me back and said they still hate Barry Larkin because of how much money he squeezed from the Reds 20 years ago. Now it's beside the point that nobody held a gun to their head. But here's the part that I'm really interested in. And as a Twitter user, perhaps you could shed some light on this. The person who sent me this tweet, their Twitter handle is at XY70HWOILVMZ4UQ. Now, sometimes people will come to you and say, hey, man, how do I follow you on Twitter? You go, oh, just Paul Daner Jr. Or for me, they'll go, hey, man, how do I follow you on Twitter? I go, oh, Mo Egger 1530. And I had to add the 1530 because there actually is a Mo Egger on Twitter. And go and look at what they call themselves. I don't know who this is. Just seriously, go and do that. How does this person, if somebody's like, oh, yeah, you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Does he have memorized XY70HWOILVMZ4UQ? Does he have to, like, read that off of his phone? Does he write that down? How does this work?
I give people a hard time when they tell me there's an underscore.
Yeah.
I'm like, look, I'm not five. I don't know how to deal with that. They're confusing. Sometimes you can't see them. I'm not dealing with underscore people. The idea that someone would try to trot that out, that's unfathomable to me. I mean, just I'll send you the link immediately. It has to be. There's no other option.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for me. So anyway, if you want the analysis of Barry Larkin coming to join the Reds broadcast booth, make sure you follow. Just go to twitter.com/XY70HWOILVMZ4UQ. And make sure there's no typos here, okay? It's not XY70HWOILVMZ3UQ. That's taken by somebody else. Okay, it's not XY70HWOILVMZ4U like P. Don't make a mistake. Don't tweet the wrong person. I want to make sure you're following. So if you want the insights into Barry Larkin, it's at XY70HWOILVMZ4UQ.
You know how sometimes when you hit the like automatic password reset and it gives you something that looks like that? Maybe he accidentally just put that into the wrong field, thinking he was resetting his password, and he actually created a Twitter handle and just said, I don't have the energy.
Well, now that I'm soon going to be following this guy on Twitter, so perhaps we can DM each other and he can let me know. Paul covers the Bengals for The Athletic. You can subscribe and read and hear his work at theathletic.com. Here's what you've managed to do. You wrote about, in reaction to Dane Brugler, the awesome NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. He's done a mock draft. And love chatting with Dane. You've written a piece in response to who he had the Bengals taking with the 5th overall pick. It was Florida tight end Kyle Pitts. And so I didn't watch every single snap that Kyle Pitts played. But as I watched these elite dudes in college football, Devontae Smith was the best college football player that I watched this year. And I'm lucky enough to have a Heisman voted, so he got my first place vote. But the guy that I watched in college football this year that made me imagine what he could be as a pro was Kyle Pitts. So this guy, and I sat at a luncheon and I listened to the CEO of Pro Football Focus slobber all over Kyle Pitts for 45 minutes. So I've been following this guy very, very closely all season long. And yet, you have successfully been able to, by writing what you wrote about this in The Athletic, you have been able to talk me out of Kyle Pitts being the guy the Bengals should take with the 5th overall pick. So congratulations.
I'm not trying to talk to anybody. I had pros in there. They happened to be outweighed by the cons. That's all. Here's the thing. I think as a Bengals fit, and that's the problem we get into, and I almost get nervous even going down this path, is worrying. We talked about this a lot, too much about fits and things like that when it comes to this pick. This pick needs to be about who's the best player you can get. But let's be honest, like, fit is still a part of the equation. What really can be the key to make your offense hit another level is a part of the equation. And nobody's saying Kyle Pitts couldn't, but I mean, we're forced to pick between these guys. And the Bengals offense, more than anything, needs some explosion in the passing game, right? We've been talking about this, it feels like forever, ever since John Ross has not turned into John Ross. They've been looking for that. And it's the one thing, you know, Joe Burrow was so good in the 10 to 20 yard range last year, but the one thing missing was really the consistency in hitting over the top. In this draft, you are given a trio of weapons that would give you exactly that. That would be burners, they'd be able to go over the top, that they have that elite weapon. And in the other case, because they're in the top 10, they're more than just that. And so when you have that, and if you're going to add a piece to the passing game, Kyle Pitts is great. And he may be part receiver, part tight end.
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings. And there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill. And by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
And part robot. I don't, you know, that he's a great. It's going to be fascinating to watch him in the league if he gets in a place where someone uses him the right way. But he's not necessarily a burner. He's fast for, maybe for a tight end. But if you have the ability to add that element to this offense, that could be, feels like, the piece that could put them over the top. So it'd be one thing if those weren't there as options. You said Kyle Pitts in the passing game makes sense with all the creativity you can do with it. But I feel like when the other options are there, and one of them would be, you would be more likely to go that direction than for a guy like Pitts.
And I think where people default to, and I'll admit I have as well, is you think about him in the red zone. And that's a salivating thought. At the same time, I kind of feel like if this team has a relatively easy time getting the ball inside the 20, they're going to be okay. They're not going to suffer from a shortage of options once they get inside the 20-yard line. Would you like a Kyle Pitts to be able to help you in the red zone? Absolutely. But I feel like if this team is good at moving the ball between the 20s, once they're inside, this team's going to be just fine. Maybe not the best in the league, but this team's going to be just fine. You just said a lot of different things here. And in one sentence, you articulated how I've come to feel about this. You wrote, if you're in love with what Pitts could bring you as a receiver, well, then maybe just take a great receiver instead. Like, that to me is, that's the bottom line. If receivers are available and you love what Kyle Pitts can do as a receiver, go take a receiver who could help you between the 20s, maybe a little bit more than Kyle Pitts can, who can take the tops off of defenses, who can solve the one area on this team offensively that just was lacking all year long and has been lacking for a while. Address that, and then all the other stuff that you envision Kyle Pitts can being able to do, I think you're going to be able to do without him.
Yeah. And the other part of this is, and people get very enamored, and rightfully so, with some of the freaky tight ends that come out over time. And we've just not really seen consistently, and really in any fashion, that they have ever lived up to hype when taken towards the top of the draft. I got the list here of going back to 2002 of tight ends taken in the top 20. I'll read it off for you. You're gonna be very excited by this, Mo. Jeremy Shockey, Kellen Winslow, Vernon Davis, Brandon Pettigrew, Eric Ebron, O.J. Howard, T.J. Hockenson, Noah Fant. How many of those have changed the equations of football teams? have been the difference makers? They haven't, and that's fine. There's by the way, one All-Pro season combined between all of those. That's one from Jeremy Shockey back in the day. When you look at where the All-Pros come from, where have they come from? Tight ends come from later in the draft. They develop. They become consistently this has happened over time. Are there first-round picks? Sure. Tony Gonzalez happens at 13th overall, back in the 90s. That happens. But rarely. Most George Kittle, 5th round. Jason Witten, 3rd round. Jimmy Graham, 3rd round. Travis Kelce, 3rd round. Gronk, 42 overall. By the way, the Bengals took tight ends in the first round in 2010 and 2013, years where after them, Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski went. It's like, there's just so much history, and it's not saying that Kyle Pitts isn't necessarily different, that he can't be great, but there is always this tight end that comes along that gets everybody excited and enamored with their freakiness, and they're very real. But we just, over time, I just don't know how many times you have to watch this same pattern happen until you're like, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to take the bait on this.
You've talked me out of it. And not that I really needed, and I know you listed the pros as well, and I want people to read the piece. But I guess you articulated the reasons why, if Kyle Pitts is there, and one of the great wide receivers is there, and maybe even if Penei Sewell is there, that I'd rather go in those directions. And that's hard for me to say, because I legitimately watched him all season long, the games that he played, and thought, man, that dude is going to be a really good pro. That guy is going to be worthy of an early pick in the draft. That guy is going to be a monster for somebody. And I just feel like that somebody should be somebody that's not the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, we're here for we're at a break. You're on the normally you're in studio for the hour, so I'm going to do. I've taught you this trick. Ask you to hang on through the break on the air, so you're going to sound like a jerk if you say no.
I'm happy to do it, Mo. I'm always here for however long you need me for.
Good.
Or until Barry Larkin even considers being on the line, then I just then I just hang up.
Well, see, we're gonna work on that. We're gonna get Barry on the show. We're gonna play part of his Zoom with the reporters and stuff today. So Barry can wait. We can slide Barry.
Go 20 minutes after 3 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Egger.
We are happy you're here.
Yeah, when we get him on, Paul Daner Jr. is with us. TheAthletic.com. He covers the Bengals. He has a podcast. Hear that podcast?
It's basically my producer today, Jeff Carr.
As the kids say, dropped today. I have not had a chance to hear it, but
hang tight.
Paul Daner Jr. covers the cap casualties from around the league. Players who could be
podcast
for the taking.
Growl,
and I want to get to
possibly
a subject that he is covered on his latest podcast. It's about arguably the biggest free agent in the NFL.
I couldn't get through it without laughing.
Could J.J. Watt come to Cincinnati? I want folks to listen to
Full disclosure,
I have not had a chance to listen to it myself beyond the clip
ESPN
that was tweeted out
Sports
today.
Station.
You outline, and I want folks to listen to it, but you outline some J.J. Watt connections. The most obvious one would be D.J. Reader, played with him in Houston, has spoken effusively about J.J. Watt as a teammate and obviously a player. I guess what I would want to know is I've seen that, you know, the Titans are interested and the Browns are reportedly interested, and there's a lot of different teams who are and should be interested in J.J. Watt. Would the Bengals be among them?
I mean, how many teams aren't interested in J.J. Watt? I mean, I think there's part of that. I mean, maybe there's some that just financially don't see the ability to make it happen or whatever. But, I mean, the guy is everything you want in your locker room. He is versatile on the field. He still has at least some juice left. You worry about his age. But, I mean, look – everybody is interested. It becomes a matter of who has something to sell to him, and he's not out here. You know, it doesn't appear that he's out here chasing money. Everybody's better. You better have some of it, but you know, you need to have some sort of connection and some sort of belief. And that was the only point I was trying to make. And there's actually more when you go beyond the clip. There's much more of me saying the obvious about
yes,
this.
Yes.
Is 625-1 is really inevitably a really giant stamp on top of all the good stuff. It's pretty hard to overcome. It's easy when you overpay, when you can overpay and bring in the types of guys you want to bring in because they are going to the highest bidder. But when they're not going to the highest bidder, you're in a tough spot right now. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that. But when you do have, you love the idea of it, and if D.J. Reader is saying, look, I'm telling you, this is the real thing happening here. You and I could be playing next to each other again and get some inside thoughts on the real direction that the team is headed, that it really could be the thing. I'm just saying you have somebody in his ear potentially. And it would be a great fit here. He would be a great fit most places. He would be a particularly great fit here for those reasons. That is not me saying that that's definitely going to happen or anything like that. That is me saying that, like, I think there's more connections and a better fit here than most people would ever even think of or realize, because no one is even thinking for a second about J.J. Watt and the Bengals, because that's not...
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Not cool, and it's not something that anybody would ever think you would see him doing. I'm just pointing out that there are actually a lot of connections and fit that would make sense for him.
So a couple of things about this. I guess the first one would be, for me, what I would wonder, if we were ever to get to a point where J.J. Watt would be considering coming to Cincinnati, would that come at the expense of Carl Lawson?
I would assume so. Yeah, I mean, I would assume you'd probably be something of that. I mean,
am I stupid for saying that I'd rather have Carl Lawson right now?
Not necessarily, because I mean, you know, it would become maybe more at the expense of an offensive lineman. You know, I would think because then you could say, all right, well, let's do this thing then, and you're going to go and you're going to have Hubbard and Watt and Reeder and Lawson, and then you know, a draft pick or something like that also in the mix. And Watt is so versatile that you could move him in inside. He could play, you know, in that set 3-4 that Lou Anarumo likes to play. You can move him up down the line. You can fill in and cover your holes in there in a variety of ways with a guy like that. Not necessarily, but if you do that and you sign Carl Lawson, whether through the tag or whatever, you end up, you know, you're up against it here with trying to really fill in your offensive line the way you want to.
And then the other one would be because people are lazy, so they just instantly assume when he got cut by the Texans that he would want to go play for the Steelers. And maybe he does. Maybe he wants to play with his brothers, and that's cool. But if J.J. Watt at this stage in his career is looking for the best football situation, it ain't in Pittsburgh.
No. I mean, if you're looking to go find a ring or whatever, it's not the best situation in the AFC North. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, they looked like a team that was kind of barely hanging on. There's still a lot of questions about who their quarterback's going to be. It's not for sure on Roethlisberger at this point. So if you're talking about where to go, I think, you know, he might know as good as anybody that Pittsburgh is not your option. You're looking for, you know, a team on the rise and has a legitimate shot to go win it and take the next step. That seems like one that's headed in the opposite direction. And I think J.J. Watt can afford to make this. This is not going to be some one-year prove-it deal. I highly doubt it. I think he wants to go someplace that he can finish his career. And that's multiple years. And if it's multiple years, as much respect as I have for Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh and, you know, losing seasons and all of that, you know, Pittsburgh is, you know, they're not exactly the one that's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's been a conversation, and I've engaged in it less than others because I don't really think it's that big of a deal. But you look around the NFL, and there's the situation that J.J. Watt is leaving in Houston with the Texans, and Deshaun Watson reportedly unhappy that he's not had much of a say in things like the coaching hires and personnel decisions, and they get the former team chaplain running the team, which is weird and goofy, and Russell Wilson's unhappy to a degree in Seattle, and Aaron Rodgers has shown some levels of frustration with the Green Bay Packers, and what some have, my guy in the afternoon earlier today, Tony Pike, he'll go on this thing about giving quarterbacks a say, letting them have a say in the way teams are constructed, in personnel decisions, in coaching decisions, and do you give Joe Burrow a say? And my response to that is, yes, yeah, he's important. You give him a say. You don't give him final authority. That's not his job. Also, he doesn't have enough pelts on the wall, as one might say, to be able to just be the quarterback and the general manager. I also kind of feel like when it comes to everybody brings up Ja'Marr Chase, they would be out of their minds to not seek his input. Maybe not let him make the decision, but I'm sure they're going to ask him, hey, how'd you like playing with him? How would you feel about him if we drafted him? Are there any red flags? Like, what do you make of this conversation, how it's been localized here, where folks worry that the Bengals aren't going to give Joe Burrow a voice in critical decisions about personnel and other team matters?
You know, I think the Deshaun Watson situation does serve as a warning to teams with high impact young quarterbacks that you can't let it get to that. You need to make them feel wanted, involved, a part of the process. Like you said, it may not always turn out that their decision is, but maybe some of them are. Some of the decisions that they make do sway by what they have to say and their impact. You have to. You cannot end up in a situation where your quarterback, who is your team, if you have one of those guys, and the Bengals believe they have one of those guys, they certainly is the face of the franchise, feel like they are not part of it. That doesn't mean they're calling all the shots. I think most even the guy that wants the most power that plays quarterback does not expect to be calling all of the shots, okay? But, you know, they have to feel like they really are part of the process. Let's be honest. They're not paid like any other guy. They are not treated like any other guy. They don't have the impact of every other guy. They are different. They can bring the whole thing down. So they should be rolled in as an important part of the process of what matters to them, particularly when you talk about shaping the offense. So I just think it's very much been a warning that the league is changing, man. And like you have now paid these guys to the level that they have this power, and the league has valued these guys in the way that they've set up to be an offensive league, and the best quarterbacks are playing at the end. They've set this up now so that the power is in their hands, and if you don't keep them involved and treat them right, they can take your whole thing down. And they're very much the cases like this, and like we have seen, are now becoming more regular, and these quarterbacks are much more aware of the power that they actually hold, and you need to make sure that you are keeping those guys happy for that reason. I just think it's kind of it's one of the most prominent ways in which the league has trended, and the biggest move it's made in that direction in recent years. You gotta be aware of it.
Since you were here last Tuesday, when did the whole tweet about the Bengals Ring of Honor going up and coming down, has that happened since?
Have you updated the service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life? Go to kelseychev.com.
The Reds lost.
You are not allowed to appear on this show without talking about a Ring of Honor.
Replace him.
Even once they have one,
I'm still going to figure out a way to introduce it into the conversation.
Signed a minor league contract, and he's been invited to a major league spring training camp.
Cam Bedrosian,
unless you have something more important to do. Steve won the Cy Young Award for the Phillies coming out of the bullpen in 1987. Cam has spent his entire 7-year big league career with the Angels,
and has actually had some pretty good seasons
in 2016 in 45 games. He had an ERA of 1.12.
Pretty good.
Last year in 11 appearances, he had an ERA of 2.45 and never gave up a home run.
Jeff,
he gave up as many home runs last year as I did.
It's 29 away from 4 o'clock.
This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
He's now with the Reds, minor league contract, but he gets an invitation to a big league spring training. The Reds today announced that Barry Larkin is joining the Fox Sports Ohio booth. He's going to be along with John Sadak, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. And still looks like my mom's husband. Chris Welsh is back. Jeff Brantley is back. Reds also announced, I don't think we needed this news, but Tommy Thrall and Jeff Brantley back at it on the Reds radio network. Chris will call some games on radio as well. But the big story, Barry Larkin, the Hall of Famer, is back with the Reds. They still need a shortstop, so, you know, make your own joke there. But he's going to be calling games on Fox Sports Ohio. College basketball tonight, Xavier will take on St. John's, tip-off at Carneseca Arena at 8:30 tonight. Miami at Toledo, Dayton's at Rhode Island, and the UC basketball game at home against Tulane on February the 26th. The tip-off time for that game has been announced. They'll play at 4 p.m. Paul Daner Jr. is here with the Athletic for one more segment.
This is my third thing. It's one less than we normally do. I'm catching a break today.
Yeah, no, but it'll be nice to have you back in studio next week. It's not, you know, nobody's here anymore. I never see people, so it's nice to have face-to-face, socially distanced human interaction once a week. So hopefully we have no more snowstorms and we're good to go.
I told you I need it. It's my one day I go out every week.
Yeah.
You're like the only person I see. It's quite sad.
It is quite pathetic. So last week, the Bengals tweet out this picture of Paul Brown Stadium in the snow, and then some internet super sleuths grab the photo and look at it and see Munoz, Crumry, and Anderson right on that ribbon board, kind of between where luxury suites are and the press box is on the east side of the stadium or the west side of the stadium. And then Fox 19 goes down there. They send a camera crew. They peek inside. There's Munoz. It would strongly suggest there's going to be a Ring of Honor. My question for you is, do you think the Bengals did that unintentionally yet also intentionally?
I don't know. the timing obviously is interesting. We mentioned earlier they had been coming under a lot of heat for not having a Ring of Honor. You and I spent a lot of time yelling about it a little bit the previous weekend, and they have had obviously they've had plans. This would not be something that they would just kick out of nowhere. We've mentioned a lot that at times they had stuff they would have probably liked to have put in last year but didn't because no fans or unknown of fans was hanging over the season. So if they felt like they were getting busted up for not having one but didn't want to make their official announcement, that would be the way that you do it. Does that mean that it wasn't still an accident? I honestly do not know. So I can't say, right? But certainly you could see that. Yeah, you could see that considering how much they were finding themselves under fire with this whole thing.
Now, but believe it or not, you're going to have a hard time believing this. There have been people who have come at me since this came out last week and have said, "All right, are you happy? Are you going to shut up about it?" And my response is no, because my job is to talk about things, and this is a thing. So I'm not going to shut up about it, but I genuinely am curious if this is what they're going to do, and what we saw last week strongly suggests that this is what they're going to do. That's great. That's good. It's good that they're listening. You had a quote from Mike Brown many, many years ago where he said, you know, "I acknowledge it. I hear it. We don't trade on nostalgia around here, but I get it. I know it's something that's important to a lot of people," all that. So this has been on their radar for a while, and maybe it's coming to fruition. But if it's going to be something as simple as just slapping a bunch of names up on the stadium and that's it, and it's never revisited again, well, that's not good enough. No, it's I want this to be sort of a, maybe not an annual process, but something that's visited on a pretty frequent basis, something that evolves, something that involves and engages the living former players and coaches who would be considered for Ring of Honor, maybe something that incorporates fans. I mean, I'm interested in seeing how this gets executed. It can't simply be, hey, throw Munoz and Crumry and Anderson and a handful of other names and we're good to go. It has to be a little bit more involved.
Yeah, and I would assume that there would be. I mean, if you're going to go down that road, you know, there's going to be a thought that it is going to be an ongoing process where you have people, an X number of people that are inducted every few years, and it's going to be about bringing them back, and it's going to be about those weekends that we've talked so much and the honoring of these types of people. And I do think, you know, I've kind of been saying this, I really do feel like they are focused on reconnecting with their fans and making game days feel big again. And part of that can be things like this. And that wouldn't just be names on a wall. You know, it would have to be events. And I think they want that. They want the event. And then they want the Bengals to feel like events again. And I think that could be something where this could be part of that. So I think it ends up there. I mean, whenever it was talked about how this would be, I'd never heard. I mean, it would always about it being something like that. I don't think that they would go all the way to this trouble to placate. But, you know, I mean, you never know how it will turn out, so we can't say specifically, but I can't imagine that.
And then they'll have it up, and we can't yell and scream about this anymore. And so then on a weekly basis, we have to chat about no practice bubble. So I just hope then what I hope they do is they build a practice bubble, but put the Ring of Honor inside the practice bubble.
And so we can see it.
Then people's heads will explode.
You really should put the names on the side of the practice bubble, you know, like so everyone that drives over the bridge can see all the Ring of Honor and throw it in their face. Here's your bubble. Here's your Ring of Honor. All right.
Sounds like a plan. I see if you can pass that on. We'll see you next week. Thank you as always.
No problem. We'll talk to you later.
It's Paul Daynard Jr. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals along with Jay Morrison for The Athletic. By the way, Red Spring training coverage, C. Trent Rosecrans. Make sure you get The Athletic for what he does, and Justin Williams on UC football and basketball. And on occasion, I write something on occasion. So check it out, theathletic.com. 18 minutes away from 4 o'clock. We have college basketball tonight in the area. Xavier is taking on St. John's in Queens. You'll hear from Travis Steele next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fourteen away from 4 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Egger. Barry Larkin, his lengthy chat with local baseball media coming up at 4:20. I told my producer Jeff Carr, let's get the best 5 minutes of Barry Larkin. We'll have that for you at 4:20. Then get the second best 5 minutes of Barry Larkin. We will see what he identified as the best 5 minutes of Barry Larkin from earlier today. Coming up at 4:20, first things first, college basketball tonight. Xavier loses on Saturday to UConn. They hit the road tonight at Carneseca Arena to take on St. John's. The Red Storm have been resurgent lately. They did lose their last game to Butler, but prior to that, they had won six consecutive games. Here's Travis Steele on what's changed about Mike Anderson's team during this recent run.
opportunity here at St. John's. Be a quad one opportunity for our team here. I think they're 6-1 in their last seven games. Much different. They're a much different team than the team that we saw back on, I think it was January 6th. They play very, very fast. They're one of the top five fastest teams in college basketball as far as pace of play goes. They're going to press for 40 minutes. They're going to try to pressure you, turn you over. We got to be able to handle the ball. And on the defensive end, it's going to be critical that we get back in transition, make them run half-court offense, and then also keep our defense tight. You know, they have some really, really good one-on-one players that can really get to the rim.
There's a Travis Steele. Now, Xavier just played UConn on a Saturday. It was their first game in 2 weeks. And here's some analysis, okay, from somebody who watched the entire game, me. The Musketeers looked a tick off. They looked like a team that hadn't played in 2 weeks. They looked like a team that had played one basketball game in 4 weeks. How about that? That's some analysis right there. There's places that'll pay for that kind of analysis. Travis Steele, I just watched the game once. Travis Steele watched it again and again and again and again because that's his job. And college basketball coaches love to tell you how much film they're watching. So Travis was asked, did rewatching the UConn loss reveal anything new about the Musketeers?
You know, defensively, you know, transition defense. It's just the habit stuff, Adam. You know, it's like blocking out. You know, they had 12 second chance points. They had 12 offensive rebounds. They got us in transition a few times. Our guys weren't back on the lift of the shot. You know, so we have guys that crash the offensive glass. We have guys that are get back guys on the lift of the shot because you got to have floor balance, right? And they got probably 6 points of layups in transition that usually I don't think we give up. But our guys weren't back, and we got to get that corrected in practice, and we worked on it heavily today. They played really well. I give UConn credit. I mean, they shot the ball really well. Cole had a terrific game, like I said, and they had some guys that we were going to play the numbers game and play the odds, and some of those guys made us pay. You know, they made some shots. So we got to be better, but on the glass, getting back in transition, you know, jumping to the ball, just little things defensively that we got to really clean up here, which is good that we have 2 days of practice leading up to St. John's.
Yeah, there you go. There's a Travis Steele. Now, a lot of people have wondered about conference tournaments. Are schools going to opt out of them, especially schools that appear to have an NCAA tournament bid wrapped up? And the Musketeers have some work to do. I would imagine that if the bracket were drawn up today, I think it's safe to say Xavier would make it. But there's still some work to do here between now and the end of the regular season. And while there's not in front of them, at least in terms of games that are scheduled, an opportunity for a completely, totally resume-damaging loss, they still have one of the best wins in all of college basketball this year, that blowout win at home over Oklahoma, which feels like it happened about 7 years ago. They still have some work to do, but it is entirely plausible that they're going to be in a position where going into the conference tournament, they're in. They don't have any more work to do. Maybe they're playing for seeding. They're in. So they would be a school that you would wonder, is it going to make sense for them to opt out? Here's Travis Steele on that topic today.
Yeah, I think it all depends kind of where we're at, Andy. I think like right now, again, if the season ended today, I'd say we're firmly in. But again, you know, we'll see how the next few weeks go. But again, we want to play games. We want to get games in. But we also want to make sure that we're not overdoing it, right, to where it's really going to hurt us. I think that's critically important as well. You don't want to just try to slide games in and then all of a sudden it's going to hurt you in the next game because you may only have a one-day turn or a no-day turn of prep leading up to a Big East Conference game. So, you know, we're looking at all options. Mario is busy. He's got they got a couple different websites that they're using now this year for teams that are looking for games. Obviously, you can always use social media as well. There's different ways, calls, but there's a website I know Mario has on Refresh constantly.
There you go. Travis Steele talking earlier today, Xavier and St. John's tip off. We'll be at 8:30 this evening, pregame at 8:05 with Joe and Byron on 700 WLW, 8 minutes away from 4 o'clock. My name is Mo Egger. By the way, our phone numbers are 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. And I'm going to make a little bit of a confession about what we did about yesterday's show. A little bit of a confession. First of all, I did it from home because sometimes, you have to. And when the pandemic first broke out and everybody was working from home, they sent us all home, said you got to work from home. And I did that for 2 months. And you make do with what you got. I don't like doing it that way. I don't like how it sounds. I don't like anything about it. And then with the weather, the roads stink. My daughter's daycare closed. So, you know, I had to do the show from home. I didn't like it. I don't like anything about it. It's a process that I can't stand. And I don't like complaining about it because a lot of folks are working from home these days. And maybe you like it if you're doing it. Maybe you don't like it if you're doing it. I personally like being here. I like seeing Jeff, who looks more and more like the truck and bozo every single day. I like the people that work here. I like the energy of a radio station. I just think that it sounds better in my headphones. So that we had that. But also, we had some stuff conspiring against us to a degree yesterday. It's a holiday. Bad snowstorm. Not a ton going on. So I want to bring up, I typically don't do this, but I want to bring up something that I talked about yesterday to perhaps clarify where I was coming from. And I'm going to do that. It's about the Reds. We'll do that coming up in 10 minutes. And you'll hear my favorite all-time Red, Barry Larkin. I wore number 11 in the years between 1987 and 1992 in every sport that I played, which were two, basketball and baseball, because of Barry Larkin. So I'm never going to say anything bad about him as an announcer. I did criticize him a couple of years ago when he was actively campaigning for Brian Price's job, and I thought that was fair criticism, but I hated doing it. You'll hear from Barry coming up at 4:20 on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
That's us. How you doing? Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hope you're having a very, very good and safe Tuesday. Barry Larkin is joining the Reds broadcast crew on Fox Sports Ohio. You'll hear his part of his session with the media from earlier today coming up in just about 15 minutes. Looking forward to that. When I got into this business, maybe not when I got into this business, but when I had an opportunity to be on the air, to do a talk show, which is what I had always wanted to do growing up because I was a nerd. I mean, let's be honest. That's what you want to do growing up. It's probably something wrong with you. But that was me. One of the very few things I knew I wanted to be on the air was a host who was willing to change his mind. Not somebody who was completely and totally 100% rigid. Here's what I think, and I'm never deviating from it, because I don't think that's how life works. Minds change. Perspectives change. Happens with age. Happens with experience. And it happens when you get information. I've changed my mind on things before, and I've had people come at me and go, oh, well, you're flip-flopper. And it's like, no, I got information, right? Like, I was all in on the Bengals taking John Ross, all in on that. And then I watched him play, heard from people who had been around him in practice, saw the lack of effort, understood it wasn't a great fit, changed my mind, looked back on it. Now I wish they would have taken somebody else. You should use information to change your mind. I'm prefacing what I'm about to talk about by making that clear that I am on board when people change their minds about stuff. But I'm still really fascinated by this. A year ago at this time, I couldn't find that many people who thought the Reds were going to be a team that finished the 162-game schedule with a losing record. And I brought this up yesterday. I used some very inexact methods of gauging public opinion, my Twitter feed. And I used perhaps an unfair metric to do this. I used the Vegas over-under for the Reds last year. It was before the season was postponed. It was before they shortened the schedule to 60 games. Around this time a year ago, I often talked about how good this team might be. And I felt like this team was going to be pretty good, all right, above 500, 84, 85 wins. And it was interesting to me. I would say that to people who, of course, wanted my, you know, expert opinion. That's a joke. And I'd say, yeah, I think they can win like 84, 85 games. And I'd get this look of disappointment, like, what are you missing here? This team's going to be great. And maybe not that many people thought they were going to be great, but I couldn't find anybody who thought that they were going to be bad. And there was this just huge surge and infusion of unadulterated.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Optimism. And it was a blast. I mean, this time a year ago, looking ahead to the baseball season was a blast. We hadn't done that in 7 years, where there was like legit bona fide excitement, anticipation, not for the typical like, oh, opening day is going to be cool, or yeah, warm weather is going to be here, but hey, the Reds might be pretty good this season. They've got a shot to contend, especially in this division. A lot of excitement, a lot of enthusiasm, and that was based on optimism for the team, which before the season last year, I could have poked some holes in that team. And yet still, despite those holes, the overwhelming consensus thought was,
This team's got a shot at being pretty good. A year later, how do we feel about this season? Spring training starts tomorrow for the Reds. You hearing and feeling the same sort of oomph that we had a year ago? Opening day is going to be here in less than 7 weeks. The Reds are in a division where there's no clear-cut runaway favorite. The makeup of this team is largely similar to what it was last year. In many respects, it's kind of the same roster. If you go year to year, and I haven't done this, a guy with a lot of time on his hands like my producer Jeff Carr might do this, but if you were to go year to year and look at the number of teams that had, look at the teams in Major League Baseball and rank them top to bottom, most roster turnover to the least amount of roster turnover, I'm guessing the Reds aren't going to be at the extreme end of either, probably somewhere middle of the pack. The point being, there have been a lot of teams that have lost a lot more guys than the Cincinnati Reds have. So it's in many respects kind of the same team, and yet I can't find that many people who think this team is going to be very good. Twitter is, it sort of reacts to what's happening in the moment. And so I take Twitter and I take social media with a grain of salt. And what's happened in the moment with the Reds is the front office has whiffed on shortstops. They've traded away two good relievers. There wasn't much of an attempt to bring back arguably the best pitcher in baseball. And they've shaved a lot of money off the player payroll. And so if you're reacting to what's happening in the moment, it's easy to fall into the morass of pessimism where you think the Reds are going to be a bad baseball team this year. And maybe they will be. And maybe there's every reason to be disenchanted by the way the Reds are being run. Maybe you resent the fact that Bob Castellini has gone into penny-pinching mode. I kind of resent it. Maybe you don't trust Nick Kroll to run this franchise. Maybe you miss Dick Williams. Maybe you think that the Reds should be sold to somebody who can spend the kind of money needed to go for it. Maybe you tire of hearing baseball owners go on and on and on and on and on about how much money they're not making. I'm with you on almost all of that. But little of that has anything to do with the current makeup of the 2021 Reds roster. Look at that roster. And is it really that dissimilar from last year's roster? So I guess what I'm looking for here is, did your mind change that drastically over a two-month season? Did it real? Were the 2 months for the most part wasn't much fun, right? For COVID, Tom Brenneman, the team got off to a kind of a janky start. I use the word janky to describe this, but it was, and it felt like they were swimming upstream from almost the get-go. Like that first weekend of the year, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Tigers, and it just felt like because of the length of the season, they were constantly swimming upstream. Constantly, they would lose 2 games, and it felt like, God, if they don't win tonight, it's going to punt them from contention. They were walking a tightrope, whatever cliche term you want to use, and it's exciting, it's interesting, kept your attention, but fun? Like for 7 weeks, no, not a ton of fun. The last 2 weeks were. Last year had its shortcomings, but did 60 games and 22 innings really change your mind that much? And if the answer is yes, well, that's okay. It's using information to change your mind. I'm not there. Like, this team on paper is not as good as last year's team because it did lose the Cy Young Award winner, and it did lose, because they chose to lose him, one of the best pitchers in the National League, relief pitchers in the National League. They lose Archie Bradley. And, they didn't reinvest anything into the team. They didn't go and get a shortstop. The team top to bottom, including obviously some of the guys they non-tendered, like Anthony DeSclafani, who left as a free agent, or Kirk Casale, who they non-tendered. You look at the team on paper, it's maybe not as good. But again, where we were a year ago, is this year's team so dissimilar that now you're giving them no chance of winning, when a year ago at this time it felt like the consensus was the Reds are guaranteed to win? That is interesting to me. That is, I don't agree. I think this team's got a shot at being pretty good. Not really good. Not very good. Not great. Probably, middle of the pack in the division. It's easy to overreact to Trevor Bauer not being here. Trevor Bauer, a year ago at this time, was coming off a bad season by his standards.
and an awful 2 months by anyone's standards, his first 2 months with the Reds. I remember talking about this. Like, it felt like a year ago at this time, like the more bankable quantities were Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo than Trevor Bauer. Nobody was talking about him winning the Cy Young Award. Nobody was talking about him being a guy who was going to be in the conversation as the best pitcher in the National League. Nobody was talking about him being head and shoulders above and beyond anybody else on this staff. Nobody was doing that a year ago. And yet, the consensus was the Reds are going to be really good. Hell, a year ago at this time, Raisel Iglesias, nobody wanted that dude. So much so that when they got rid of him this offseason, I'd still had people bringing up 2019. And yet, Raisel Iglesias coming off, by his standards, a rotten 2019. There's no shortage of people that thought the Reds were going to still be pretty good. They had a hole at shortstop last year. I remember bringing it up going, dude, Freddy Galvis, got to do better than that. Frankly, I think Jose Iglesias is better. Because at least if the ball's hit his way, I know what he's going to do with it. Forget his offense. But they had a hole at shortstop. They still do. Last year, the hole at shortstop, not a big deal. Now the hole at shortstop, you would think, is going to doom this team to losing about 115 games. Things really haven't changed that much. It could have been a matter of maybe you realize a year ago, maybe you think, okay, well, I overrated Mike Moustakas, right? Overrated Nick Castellanos. Players whose production perhaps didn't meet the expectations that people had, but statistically, the way Moustakas and Castellanos played last year wasn't that far of a departure from what those players have typically been. Hell, Castellanos set a 37 home run pace in 60 games, and Mike Moustakas, I mentioned this before, Mike Moustakas, if you look at the last 5 years of his big league career, last year, shortened season, but last year would have been his second highest OPS. Hell, a year ago at this time, if I mentioned Shogo Akiyama, I'd have people say, look, I get it. You got to give him some time. It's going to be a while. He's going to get used to the United States. He's going to get used to the new ball. He's going to get used to living here. He's going to get, okay, he's going to take some time. And it did. And after about 6 weeks, Shogo Akiyama was an on-base machine. But you should feel even better about him than he did a year ago because that whole learning curve should be behind him. I'm not telling you what to feel. I'm not telling you this team's going to be great. I'm not telling you they're going to be awful. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't have changed your mind. I'm not trying to whip people into excitement over a team that is probably not capable of winning 90 games. But what is interesting to me, fascinating to me, is how based on really in the grand scheme of things, a tiny amount of information, 60 games and some roster turnover, we have gone from thinking the Reds were going to be great last year to now, I can't find anybody who thinks they're going to be better than average. That is really interesting to me. And I don't completely understand. I don't completely get how your mind changed after a 60-game season and two playoff games against really good starting pitching. By the way, the Reds last year played, from a Vegas standpoint, played pretty much to expectation. Over-under before the 60-game season started was 31.5. The Reds finished with 31 victories, kind of right there. The Reds finished at a pace that would have had them winning about 83, 84 games. It's kind of where most of us had them pegged. 83 and 84 games last year, we kind of felt like was going to be good enough to be in the hunt. By the way, it looks top to bottom like the division, which wasn't regarded as really good before last season, is going to be that great this year. There's where I want to know what happened in those 60 games that changed your mind. By the way, Hunter Green is closer to the big leagues today than he was a year ago. Nick Lodello is closer to the big leagues today than he was a year ago.
My favorite Stevenson Reds player of all time is going to be part of the Fox Sports Ohio broadcast team,
Casale.
Along with a new play-by-play guy, John Sadak. Barry Larkin joins.
We'll
rotate
catcher.
With returning analyst Chris Welsh and Jeff Brantley.
on so the defensive side as well. Work. It'll be as great as Chris Welsh is.
I know I've
Chris
crushed
Welsh
this front office.
Underrated broadcaster.
I've beaten up on maybe ownership, working in the United States.
The unwillingness to spend money.
I don't think Chris Welsh gets the credit he deserves
for being so good.
But when I look at this team,
job
spring training begins.
Red's primary color
analyst,
Allison
Jeffrey,
different
from the one that last year.
Everybody was in love with.
It will be different though. Somebody who's not a former.
I know it feels like a lifetime ago. But everybody was in love with this team.
Who's done a lot of broadcast work before?
Largely the same group of dudes.
Had worked for MLB.
By the way, a year ago at this time,
starting when the network launched in 2009, he was on ESPN.
Last year he was the best offensive player on the team.
Joining them in 2011 was an analyst on Baseball Tonight.
A year ago at this time, we're trying to figure out what
Nick Senzel is. Also, the
network
coverage of the College World Series.
Trying to figure out what Nick Senzel is.
He's got some.
I understand
some
changing your mops. I understand
as does
evolving
his brother
your
Bob.
Opinion.
I try to do those
Barry
things
Larkin,
all the time
with Fox Sports Ohio.
But in terms
Ohio,
of how I feel about the collection
with,
of players,
the local
the
baseball
have,
media,
I kind of feel
today.
Mostly the same as I did about a year ago. I would prefer to have Trevor Bauer.
I've done
but
this on
a year ago
level.
At this time, I didn't know you could count on Tyler Mahle.
And I learned a lot.
I would prefer to have four former All-Stars on my staff.
Well,
they still
the
have three.
And
two of the dudes who are in the running to take a starting spot showed a lot of promise, especially late last season, Michael Lorenzen and TJ
what's
Anton.
Happening on the field and, more importantly, why it's happening, and I look forward to
the way that the sort of consensus about this team has evolved.
I had a chance to spend some time
based on a small sample size.
And I'm excited about his professionalism and his consistency.
I think that stemming from what you said about the Twitter mentality of fans today, they react very quickly to the numbers that they see, and they see the low counting stats. It's the first numbers that you see on any baseball reference page. Do you think people overweigh those stats, and by the time they get to the point of the conversation where you're talking about, well, but they actually had a better on base, they actually had a better OPS
situation,
then that's when their mind starts
following the footsteps of
I think there's something to that, although if you're looking at counting stats, so Eugenio Suarez hit 15 homers in 60 games.
Obviously, Hall of Famer. So
I mean, that's like a 40 home run pace.
In
a year that for him was, it fell off the table compared to what he did the year before. I wonder how many folks thought Mike Moustakas and Nick Castellanos
and
were better than they actually are.
I can utilize my time in Cincinnati.
I mean, not that they're bad and not that they can't be productive players this season, but I wonder how many folks, they knew the name, especially Moustakas, but they knew the names and thought the Reds were getting perennial all-stars.
I think that they saw Castellanos' numbers specifically in Chicago and said that's who.
So that would be
and his numbers in Detroit were good, but you weren't overwhelmed by them for 2 months in Chicago, especially against the Reds. He was unbelievable. But I think the way those two guys performed, and look, Castellanos went weeks where it never felt like he made hard contact, and he's lost in right field. But neither guy was that.
I have had plenty of conversations.
Was that different than what they've been through their career? That's just that end of it is really interesting to me. At the beginning of the season last year, I couldn't find anybody who thought the Reds were going to be terrible. Their team
is
mostly the same.
But I
can't find anybody who thinks the Reds are going to be very good.
And I
kind of feel like the same as I did about a year ago. You're going
to
be playing a lot of meaningful baseball games in September.
My relationship will evolve.
I've had people say to me there's kind of a rebuild feel to this. This team on paper this year is better than any baseball team the Reds had in 2015, 16, 17, 18, and it's not even close. The years we were watching Jackson Stevens and Lisaberto Bonilla and Adger Wojciechowski, who I compared to Roger Clemens.
Within the organization.
Tim Adelman.
Yeah, Tim Adelman. Roland Scott Feldman, the opening day starter. This team this year on paper, maybe this isn't the best standard to apply to.
This situation.
You want to tell me this is a rebuild again?
Barry,
look at those teams.
In the past about
this team is otherworldly better.
Still would like to do and
I know I've beaten up on the front office, but what has changed? Your phone calls are welcome at 513-7.
549-1530
and 866-702-3776. I really do want
to
hear from you because I'm genuinely interested. Did 60 games and 22 innings drastically change your mind, and how and why? We'll hear from you, and we'll hear from Barry Larkin next.
It was construed or misconstrued as me saying that I would like to manage And I think it, just created some bad feelings, which really weren't there, but it is what it is. So thank you for asking that question. If a manager situation comes available in the future, then I would look at it, but that's not really what I'm here to do. What I like to do is I like to be part of the development and the implementation of strategies. That is something that that I'm really interested in. That's something that really intrigues me. And as I mentioned, my relationship with Nick Kroll and Sean Pinder in the minor leagues, my conversations with them, some of my conversations with Phil Castellini and Karen Forgas in the front office is more about strategizing. And that's where I am mentally. So that's what I'm enjoying doing at this particular point. And that's what I'm most interested in. So if a manager opportunity comes up in the future, first of all, I think we have very qualified people in our organization that are in line and much closer to it than I. And, I would support those guys. But if it came up at some point, T, then certainly I would look at it. But that's not something that I really have interest in at this point.
You're welcome. That's Barry Larkin chatting with the local baseball media earlier today. He is joining the Reds TV crew on Fox Sports Ohio. Next hour, you'll hear him discuss the Reds shortstop situation, which, quite frankly, you might argue that even though he hasn't played a big league.
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill. And by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Game in 17 years, Barry Larkin could still be considered the best option to play shortstop for the Reds on opening day. But first, your phone calls. What's changed over 60 games and 22 innings? Next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. it's a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. Go to KelseyChev.com. Reds have made a move. They've signed to a minor league contract right-handed reliever Cam Bedrosian. Cam Bedrosian is just kind of a fun name to say. His dad was Steve Bedrosian. They called him Bedrock. He won the Cy Young Award pitching for the Phillies in 1987 in relief. And now Steve, his son, Cam, is trying to follow in his footsteps. Probably never going to win a Cy Young Award, but maybe he wins a roster spot on the Reds. This is a dude who has had some big league success. Like, if you look at Cam Bedrosian's numbers, you're not going to go, ew! I mean, you're not going to, like, do cartwheels, but it's not like some of these dudes they've signed where you're like, whatever. Like, this guy's got some big league bona fides. He's also had some crappy years. How's that for deeply analytical verbiage? Crappy seasons. Like last year, he pitched 14 innings. Not that many, but he only gave up 4 runs. Never gave up a home run. You have to go way back, 2016. Dude was pretty good. ERA of .112. And did I mention his dad won a Cy Young Award? How about that? Steve.
He even started 7 games in 2019.
Did he? Well, he sure did, didn't he? Wow. And his ERA was 3.23. And people get mad. Oh, ERA! I didn't mention win-loss totals, and the goal this year is to go for a third consecutive season without mentioning win-loss totals. I mentioned this before. You just heard Barry Larkin. He is going to be on the broadcast crew on Fox Sports Ohio, rotating with Chris Welsh and Jeff Brantley. College basketball tonight. Xavier tries to bounce back after losing to a UConn on Saturday. They're taking on St. John's at Carneseca Arena, which is not a great place to watch a college basketball game. The Red Storm. Whenever St. John's gets like marginally good, oh, that East Coast media perks up. Storm is back. Well, then they lost to Butler. They play Xavier tonight at 8:30 on 700 WLW. Also tonight, Miami tries to break a 3-game losing streak, taking on the team with the best record in the MAC, Toledo. A game tips off at 7 o'clock. And the Dayton Flyers will play at Rhode Island tonight against the mighty Rams. UC and Tulane scheduled for February the 26th. We now have a tip-off time, 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. on Friday, February the 26th. All right, now we're going to talk to people on the phone, take phone calls, let other people have a chance to voice their opinions. I've asked this repeatedly, and maybe I get an answer. The Reds, before last season, everybody thought they could be really good. The Reds before this season, everybody thinks they're going to stink. Team is mostly the same. Really not that much has changed. So why has your opinion evolved if it has? And if it hasn't, maybe you thought the team was going to be terrible last year. Maybe you still think they do. Or think they will be. I don't know. But now we're going to let other people talk, including here in Madisonville. Bill, you're on ESPN 1530. How are you?
I am phenomenal. I'm glad. Did the Reds get the get a prize for using the most value mailer coupons for restocking the minor league program?
I think they're cashing in on those incentives as we speak.
Very good. One point and one rant. My point is, I don't think it's the 60 games as much as it was the 22 innings. Because here's the thing. If this season plays out like last season, the Reds will slide into the playoffs. And I guess that might be okay, but...
Well, last year you had the expanded playoffs. We're not going to have that this year, so that is a kind of a major difference, but go ahead.
Okay, but, you know, we were good enough to get swept by Atlanta, to not score a single run, and mm-hmm. we didn't do anything to address those deficiencies. Now, Dan might be happy with just making the playoffs or being competitive, but this is a city with a long, proud history of winning championships with this baseball team. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough. And now for my rant. I am tired of the billionaires who look at fans and go, well, if you want better payroll, you've got to buy more tickets. It's the only business in town that I know of where the consumer has to pony up more for the product to improve.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. No, that is extraordinary. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for the phone call. That's fair. The first point... Look, the 22 innings, maddening. And, you know, to me, they were an extreme example of everybody's worst fears realized. All through last season, even during those 2 weeks that they were charging hard toward the postseason, I think you're lying if you say you didn't have in the back of your head this fear that this offense, which hadn't been good all year long, and really,
without diving through every single inning of every single game over those last 2 weeks, it's not like they were cranking out huge run totals over those final 2 weeks of the regular season. There was a fear of what happens if the offense dries up, right? I remember having those conversations in the middle of the season, in late August. Hey, look, there's time for this team to bounce back, but the idea was to do more than just make the playoffs. And what's going to happen if they go against a team that has really good starting pitching, which obviously they did in Atlanta? If the offense dries up, oh boy, you know, that's a problem. And that's exactly what happened. And Max Fried and Ian Anderson were really, really good. And yes, it's completely fair to wonder if this team got into the postseason. I would say this, if this team found its way into the postseason, it will be a better baseball team than the one that got in last year, quite simply because of math. There is no 7 seed in the National League, or at least there's that's the plan. They're not going to get in as the 7 seed. They're not going to get in. We had two teams that finished the shortened season with losing records that got in the playoffs last year. It's not going to be as watered down. It probably will be one day if Rob Manfred and the owners get their way. So, but you know, I will worry about that once they're there. Once they're, you know, playing,
you know,
in
I
October.
Was talking about,
and if they are playing in October,
changing
it's going to be probably because this
before.
Offense with the
my,
same group of dudes
down the hall,
is
Lance
better
McAllister,
in 2021
for
to 2020.
I don't know
the
if this
point,
has been a big
yes,
cause celeb
right.
Of his recently, but for years,
and it's, I think that's something the Reds are going to have to
show either
to kind of contend
this
with
one, or
who knows how many
on
tickets
they're
going to
be
allowed
to
sell. Advocating
but
for
it wasn't that long ago
they were dealing with their worst attendance figures in more than 3 decades.
He would talk about this not
2018, their worst
semi-regular
attendance
base, in 34
right?
Like
years.
Maybe once during the
wasn't
high school
that
basketball
long
season, and usually
and really in terms of
my
of years where they could sell
be,
tickets, it was only one season ago.
In large part
so
because I don't
now you
kind of
go backwards,
of
and we're not going to be able to reinvest in the team, and we had to shave payroll, but we could use we could use an influx
really
of money.
Care about the
how do you get that money? It's by
thought,
selling
like,
tickets.
Is it that
okay, well, how do you sell tickets? You win baseball games.
Then I,
the
I
Reds
started
made it
about being a bad
more
high
difficult for themselves this offseason to win baseball
the fun part of being
it's
basketball
a weird,
player is actually
I guess kind of business
playing
model.
Basketball.
And right? I think it's going to be interesting to see how
so
people respond.
Kind of evolved
clearly,
when it comes to that opinion.
You're
going to
have
yeah,
to put
like,
it in the context of a situation
a
where the Reds
it's,
can maybe sell 8,000 tickets per game
like
to start
basketball.
The season.
You're going
to
be paying
but yeah,
maybe
sure.
some kid from the AV club.
You got a guy
but
who's
yeah,
worth
yeah,
a hell of a lot of money
to
in Bob Castellini,
the game, so
whose business from a ticket selling standpoint bottomed out 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
This is why I'm bringing this up.
The on-field product hasn't gotten significantly better. They haven't done anything to make the team better this year.
Alabama.
What's to make people feel compelled to want to invest
schools,
in that product, which
Parker
they didn't
Carver.
3 years ago? I think that's totally fair.
Boys
quarter
basketball.
To 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. But as frustrating as those 22 innings were, and they
the
were
game
frustrating.
Ended on a buzzer beater.
How much of that was
to win the game for Parker?
Some great Atlanta pitching, some awful luck,
and
bad base running by
it was
Joey Votto in one instance.
Thinking I mean, it was a
some,
game where
some situations where the right guy didn't come up in the clutch.
Two teams basically
do you change
just
your entire
ball,
outlook on a franchise based on 22 innings?
That's not basketball.
The answer is yes.
Right? That's not,
I'd love to know why.
That's not
plus.
Basketball. That's not playing.
Everything
playing
in sports is being talked about.
Occasionally, the ball
like
goes
it's
off.
A business decision because
and if
well,
you, like, you played the way I did, the ball never goes
that's
in.
That's the best way to look at things.
Playing basketball,
a college
is not
basketball player is doing exactly that.
And
he's being
like,
crushed.
Point?
We'll spend some time on that coming up at 5:35. How not
on
to
ESPN
play basketball? 15:30 Cincinnati
terrible.
Sports Station.
I mean, quite honestly, like if I was a kid, whether it's at the high school level or a different level, and I go out for basketball, and my coach says this is how we're going to try to win, I'd go, yeah, I'm out, man. I want to play. I want to play the game. If we get the brakes beat off of us, we get the brakes beat off of us. The other team's better, and we're going to lose, and we have to learn how to cope with losing. So that's it. We're not going to be Tony Yates against Kentucky. We're not just going to, you know, kill the – who? What kid wants to do that? Like, who – what kid – like, what a disservice to the kids. So, yes, I'm now – my opinion has changed completely. And it was mostly – was out of two things. It was, A, like, dude, who cares? It's high school basketball. Like, And number two, I've seen schools that have a hard time staffing, like the regular scoreboard and clock. That could be worked out. I'm guessing, for the most part, that could be worked out.
I want to
have
what,
a clock.
I want to know what the atmosphere was like in that gym. Like, how many parents were standing up and screaming, like, play?
You know what? If I'm one of those parents, peace out, I'm out. I'm just, tell me when the game's over. I'm going up the street. I came to watch my kid play basketball, not stand here. Right? Like, I'm not, you know, if my daughter plays hoops and that's what we're doing, see ya. You can keep playing. If this is what you like, I came to watch you play basketball, not stand there.
What do we call in that offense, the pick and stay?
It's an exaggerated version of the four quarters, I guess. But yes, I mean, who? It's not fun. It's not fun for the kids. There's supposed to be some baseline level of enjoyment for the kids who are playing the sport, right? Oh, we might lose. Well, then they lose. Who cares? High school basketball. Get a shot clock. I mean, legitimately, if my daughter plays basketball and, you know, given her genetics, she's not going to be good at it. And, hey, Dad, here's what's going to happen. You're going to come to the game. It's an 8-minute quarter. If we get the ball, we're going to hold to the last shot. Like, yeah, fun. I'm not coming to that. I will come watch you participate in anything, any sport, any activity. But on the list of activities is not you standing there while we watch the clock. I mean, if that's your strategy as a coach, get out. I mean, legitimately, if that's, like, I understand that in college basketball, shorten the game, right? That's what you want to do. It's how you pull off an upset. Shorten the game, extend possessions. You do that within the confines of a shot clock. At some point, the ball's going to have to go up. If you're a coach of kids, I don't care what the level is, third grade or 12th grade, and that's your strategy, please quit. And actually get coaches who can coach basketball. Get a coach who can actually coach and teach kids how to play basketball. And look, maybe you're going to lose a lot of games, but you know what? Do your job. Coach them. Make them better. Instead of, we're just going to, I'm like, well, I'm watching footage of this. This looks awful. What kid wants to do this? Especially during a pandemic. I'm going to go to practice. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I'm healthy. And when we play games, we're not actually going to play the sport. That is like irresponsible. So, yes, I am now. See, I've changed my mind on something. Have a shot clock, but also get rid of any coach. Like, if I was an athletic director and this is my coach's strategy, we're done. We're moving on. We're going to find somebody who can actually teach the kids how to play the sport. And, you know, do stuff that you actually do in basketball, like, you know, dribble and pass and run an offense and shoot and rebound and the things that are actually involved, the blocking and tackling of basketball, not actual physical blocking and tackling, but you know what I mean. Not stand there and watch a clock. What are we doing? For years on this show, we used to do the lopsided girls' high school basketball score of the day, because that was my other favorite high school sports. Like every day, you could find a game in this part of the country, and sometimes we would extend to go find a more lopsided score in another part of the country, and you'd find these games where it's like 87-6, and the team loses, and I would always say, like, stop feeling sorry for the kids. And girls' basketball seemed to lend itself to games like this more than boys, but certainly there are blowouts in boys' basketball. And I would always take up for the team that blew the other team out, going, look, those kids who lost 87-6, they know they suck. They know it. As a kid, as a guy who's a terrible high school basketball player, I knew I sucked. I knew it. And I was okay with it. I knew I wasn't getting a scholarship. Bob Huggins wasn't walking into the...
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, stay late. Come often.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Gym that I played at. I got it.
We lost a lot of games where I didn't help the team. And you know what? I'm okay. I mean, I have all sorts of other issues that have nothing to do with my lack of athletic prowess. But the kids are going to be okay. Let them lose. They're going to be fine. They're going to be. Your kid can lose at sports, and they're going to be fine.
Who feels more confused, the team that won 6-4 or the team that lost 6-4?
That is the indignity. That's the tough one there. Better to win the 6-4 game. Keith Boddy made the shot. I don't know if he had all 6 points for his team or 4 of the 6. Keith Boddy led his team in scoring with 4. Like, your kid can lose and they're going to be fine.
And if
you're an adult that can't handle losing, get out. Let somebody who can coach the sport do it. I mean, look, my wife and I talk about what our daughter's going to be into all the time, and it's like, well, if she's into sports, awesome. We're not going to push it. I hope she's into sports because I'm into sports, but if she's not, fine, whatever. It's her choice. No problem. But if she ends up sort of gravitating to basketball and we're going to play, very first thing out of my mouth to the coach is going to be, are we going to play these games where it ends 4-2, not because the kids stink at it, but because we're just going to hold the ball? Because my kid's not doing that. If you lose 49-3, fine, whatever. We're going to go get ice cream after the game. She's probably not going to be in the WNBA. It's going to be fine. We can handle that. We cannot handle, well, we're just going to mail it in. And no, play basketball. A couple minutes away from 5 o'clock, more from Barry Larkin. Barry Larkin's going to be on the Reds TV broadcast, so that's going to be awesome. And you'll hear him talk about the shortstop situation. We also have to get over, we did the topic last week, spilled milk, because it was National Don't Cry Over Spilled Milk Day. Spilled milk that people need to get over, stop crying about. There's two when it comes to Barry Larkin that I'm seeing today. More on that, more of your phone calls. You could tell me why you've changed your mind on the Reds. And we got to talk about the college basketball player who quit and why I'm okay with it. Next, ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Hey, what's up? I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. We have a term we use in this business. It's called standby. And typically what you do, if you're in a position where you're working with somebody who's about to go on the air, but they have no way of knowing it, and they have a mouthful of M&Ms, you tell them, stand by, and that's basically code for microphones coming on, you're going to have to talk. And it's a term we use in the business that might have been absent from the proceedings right there.
In all fairness, I was thrown off by your presence in front of the microphone.
Well, I literally had half a bag of M&Ms in my mouth. Now, you might say, wait a minute, you've been doing this show for God knows how many years, 13, 14, I've lost track. And usually at 4 after is when the microphone's going to come on, so be ready. How about not sit there with a whole mouthful of M&Ms? But I'm also a bit of a trained monkey. So if standby is coming, M&Ms go out the mouth, no standby. I literally, did you see me run over to the garbage can and heave out a mouthful of M&Ms? Now, I've wasted half a bag. It was $1.25. I don't know why our vending company charges that much. So now I'm out half a bag of M&Ms. The show's gotten off to a poor start, all because you couldn't tell me, Jeff, to stand by.
I'll buy you a bag of M&Ms. Why are you eating that many M&Ms at one time?
Because I didn't have time. I was hungry. I didn't have time, and a lot of M&Ms in my mouth is... That's a good question. But if you would have told me to stand by, I'd have them all in my stomach right now. Or, I don't know, but they wouldn't even be in that garbage can.
Look like a bag of regular. Would you rather have regular or peanut? I'll mark it down.
Either way is fine. I went regular this go-around. But if you bought me peanut, I would eat those. But I prefer to not have to spit them all out in the garbage can.
Do we have the pretzel ones in the...
I don't like those. That's a little bit too much.
You don't like those?
A little too rich for me. Yeah.
What about the caramel ones?
Very good.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the caramel ones. All right, what are we doing? We're having a sports talk show now? Okay. You know what we should do is start the hour with Bob in Florence. Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Mo, what's going on?
I'm trying to use my tongue to wipe the candy coating off my teeth from the M&Ms I just spit out in the garbage can.
I can't tell you how many times I've done that.
No, I understand.
Hey, I got away from you last week for a few days. I was watching the impeachment trial.
Oh, no.
And this was kind of interesting and something I don't think you're going to hear on most of the stations out there.
Mm.
But Trump, during this whole riot thing, actually called Tommy Tuberville.
I did see this.
Yeah. Well, listen to this. And this is the part that I don't think you're going to hear about on most of the major networks out there.
Yeah.
At the end of the call, Tuberville tells Trump, he says, hey, they're taking the vice president, and I got to go. And Trump says, wait a minute. And Tuberville says, get a effing job to Trump.
Is that really what went down during that phone call? Are you sure?
Yeah,
have you seen a transcript? Really?
At the end, right. Yeah.
Nice. I'm glad you're back with us and impeachment proceedings are over.
Oh, yeah. It's all hey, Red's biggest problem is going to be this year.
No, go for it. Yeah, tell me.
Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with that.
And you know what, Mo? Before the Cardinals got him, I would have told you that I thought the Reds, maybe not a great year, but I think they would have won the division. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the Cardinals making that acquisition, you know how things tend to not only go well maybe for that guy, but kind of perks up the whole lineup a little bit.
Sure.
And I think they're going to need some things. They're going to need a big year out of Dylan Carlson, who's a rookie, mm-hmm. basically. And Tommy Edman's going to have to play second base now on a full-time basis with Colton Wong going to the Brewers. But with all those things, I really, really like their pitching staff. And at some point, they're going to get Jordan Hicks back, probably mid-year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, I think the Cardinals are – I think right now you have to favor them. And maybe the Reds, perhaps either second or third. I think Milwaukee's going to be pretty good, too.
Yeah, I do, too. I would, if I'm, you know, if pressed to put the teams in order of finish before the season begins, I would go St. Louis, Milwaukee, 1-2, Cincinnati, 3, Chicago, 4, Pittsburgh, a very distant fifth. And, look, Nolan Arenado has had a fantastic career, and he's an upgrade from Matt Carpenter, both in the field and at the plate. At the same time, it's not like Arenado's coming off a great season. He had a shoulder issue. So, you know, there's got to be some rebounding done by him. And, you know, top to bottom, you know, Paul Goldschmidt did not have in a truncated season, I guess, your typical Paul Goldschmidt year. But there was, I know you're a big Cardinals guy, there was not that much that was impressive about St. Louis offensively. Now, I could obviously say the exact same thing about the Reds. They got to the postseason on the strength of their starting pitching. Are some of those guys who do come back in 2021 going to perform better? Sure. And I'm going to guess that Arenado makes that lineup better to the extent that not only does his production help them, but he makes other guys in his immediate vicinity in the lineup better. But again, top to bottom, is that team offensively so much head and shoulders above and beyond everybody else in the division? I don't think so. And it's, you know, there's the Coors Field effect, which is a factor. I don't think it's as huge a factor as people make it out to be, because I still do believe if you can hit, you can hit. Does Nolan Arenado by himself remake the St. Louis Cardinals offensively to the extent that they're just otherworldly better than everybody else in the division? I would have a hard time saying yes.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with some of what you said, Mo. And I don't think it's, by any stretch, I don't think it's all going to be him. But I really, really like Tommy Edman. And he's basically been an everyday player anyway, but just kind of all over the place. And really, they're going to need – Harrison Bader's going to need to hit the ball better, a lot better. And they're going to need to get something out of left field, whether it's Lane Thomas or Tyler O'Neill or who that turns out to be. But I'll tell you, just with that deal alone, and if they had made it, I gave them basically no chance at all. But I think with that deal alone, they are a lot better.
Yeah, that's the biggest move. It's, you know, you might argue that it's easily the biggest move in the National League Central. And to a degree, refreshing to see a team in this division do something. But, you know, the skeptic in me goes, even if Arenado is as good as advertised and when he's at his best, first of all, his glove's going to travel. So he's going to give you elite defense. I'll grant you that. But if you're expressing some degree of skepticism about the Reds because some guys had down seasons, by his standards, Nolan Arenado had a down year. We'll see. It'll be fun to talk about, Bob. Thank you, as always.
Okay, Mo.
11 after 5, ESPN 1530. I touched on this yesterday, if you were with us. How I feel about the Reds as a baseball team doesn't necessarily jive with what the tone has been talking about their front office and ownership this offseason, where the tone has been all about saving money and then here late in the offseason swinging and missing when it comes to getting a shortstop. There has been a very underwhelming feel to the offseason. There has been a familiar feel to the offseason where to a degree it kind of feels like the miserable years of the rebuild. Now, maybe not to the same extent, because they haven't brought in as many retreads hoping that those guys play important roles on the team this year. They've brought in some guys. D. Strange Gordon has been brought here to maybe be a utility guy, and if he ends up being the starting shortstop for some reason, that's not good. But I don't think that's why he was brought here. They've acquired some guys. They're going to see if they can stick and use and find some use for, but to a large degree, this offseason, the offseason has felt like 15, 16, 17, 18. But this team is far and away superior than any of those squads were. Far and away superior. It's not even close. So in the middle of the offseason, it was very easy to spend a lot of time in the weeds of watching them cut payroll, watching them trade away relievers and not take that money and reinvest it into the team, looking at the hole at shortstop and wondering if it's ever going to get filled,
lamenting the loss of Trevor Bauer to a team that just simply has more money. And the team's reluctance or unwillingness to go and get somebody who's got a resume from another team to replace him. It's easy to do that during the offseason. I did it. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that the Reds chose to cut payroll. I don't think it makes much business sense. I think they could afford to keep the payroll at what it was. I really genuinely do. I think Bob Castellini, if he's hurting for money, could go to his partners. And if they're really hurting for money, sell the damn team. They'll get $2 billion for it. The last three franchises that were sold went for a minimum of $1 billion. He bought it for like $280. Pretty good ROI, right? Return on investment. But the baseball team itself, the roster, that's not a bad club. That's not a 90-loss team. I'm not even sure it's a below 500 team. And I've kind of been stuck on this theme for a day and a half, two shows, whatever, that if you go back to a year ago and think of where most Reds fans' heads were a year ago, boy, this team's going to be pretty good offensively. They weren't last year. Now, I roll my eyes as much as anybody whenever I hear, well, they're really up.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky, but they were. This team spent most of the season hitting in the low 200s. Do what you want with the statistic of batting average, but that is a fact. I don't think this team's going to do that this season. I think there are enough players that you could say will either perform better or be luckier or both, that it is fair to assume the offense is going to be at least a little better. We'll see how Rob Manfred's new dead baseball affects that, which I need that explained to me. Why, if the ball wasn't juiced, do they have to deaden it? They're deadening the baseball this year. I don't know what that involves. Jeff, do you know what deadening the baseball involves?
According to the article that I read, yeah, no idea.
Yeah. So the baseball was juiced, but now it has to be deadened. If the baseball wasn't juiced, why do they have to deaden it? Can somebody ask Rob Manfred that question? Does Rob Manfred do interviews anymore? No. But anyway, yeah, I do think their offense could be a little bit better. But again, before last season, there's this huge infusion of excitement and optimism. And people are pumped. Trevor Bauer was coming off a lousy year by his standards. Raisel Iglesias was coming off a lousy year by his standards. Nick Senzel was an unknown. And Tyler Mahle,
Barry Larkin, in
the rotation.
Jeff, you have
and they had
the,
a whole of shortstop.
The ad, the commercial we
and
just
many
heard.
Of those things. Let's see, Bauer's not even here anymore. Iglesias isn't even here anymore. They still have
like
a whole of shortstop. Senzel is still an unknown.
The audience
and
CDC
Tyler
Mahle
is like a legit
Do you have that
starter.
Ready? Do you have
okay? I want to ask you this. I'm not making.
You might
fun
think
of
this team's
message.
Not going to be quite as good.
Be safe. Be considerate.
This year, as you thought before last season.
Do what you got to do to maintain your health and safety.
But did 60 games and 22 innings really change your mind that much?
What's fascinating about this guy is, have you ever been in like
a
small
podunk
town?
Welcome at 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776.
The big Reds news of the day involves Barry Larkin.
No,
I don't know.
They haven't hired him
to play
shortstop.
Although I would have asked.
Or a drugstore.
And you ask one of the locals.
They have hired him, however, to work in the booth for Fox Sports Ohio.
Does the person you talk to sound exactly like this guy?
Games with John Sadak, and he's going to rotate with Chris Welsh, and he's going to rotate with Jeff Brantley.
I thought you had the spot.
Chris Welsh is still going to
do
the Tech Talk segment, right? Where he puts on baseball pants.
I can do his voice.
Why does he put on baseball pants for that segment?
Why don't you put on baseball pants for the show?
You can't play the
baseball pants.
You can't play the audio of the commercial. Why can somebody – let's get Chris Wells on. I just want to know, A, is he going to be doing the tech talk?
Heard the good news
if it's
about
not
COVID-19
Chris Wells,
vaccines?
Is it Barry Larkin?
Oh, they're here.
Why do they have to have baseball
But you can do
on?
More than wait for your turn.
Like, I understand if – hey, it's
not – Oak Street is right down there. You'll see the big old
Eugenio Suarez is going to show us how to peel
the
ground
the acoustic guitar in the background.
Standing there with the microphone. You don't need baseball pants on.
Watch your distance.
I don't want to get ripped for making fun of – that's enough. I just – I feel like I went to a wedding in Defiance, Ohio
pants
once.
Are not uncomfortable.
My buddy Rob
baseball
and I
every
stopped off
day?
At like a little
do I get to wear
barber
stirrups?
Shop, and that guy was sitting in the chair.
Yeah. Particles that
stirrups can go with. And wear a mask. Oof.
I don't literally coach wore baseball pants.
We really nailed
pants.
That bit, didn't we? 25 minutes away
Mr.
from, Pagliaro, 25
doing,
minutes
man?
After 5. I've like, lost track of time.
Barry
Larkin
kids,
is
the other team.
Back.
Their dads have shorts
not managing
on.
The Reds. He emphasized. We played it before. He's emphasized. He's not coming back to manage.
Pants on for.
He would look at other managerial openings,
well, I,
but he loves David Bell. He's
there.
Not coming back to manage.
No, part of you thinks that
keep
if you're
that
a
normal functioning adult.
Because it's hard to manage and call
baseball
games in the Fox Sports Ohio booth at the same time.
How about the guy that shows up for Wednesday
and he's not
going to
be the shortstop either? Because
buddy, what
do
you? I mean, what are we doing?
Barry Larkin or Kyle Farmer?
So I'd rather have Barry Larkin
Chris Welsh,
even now.
You pitched in the big leagues.
I'd rather have
so
Barry Larkin
20
license.
Years
I
just, from now.
I watch
I'd
that segment
Byron
every
Larkin
time. It's on. I go, this is great. It's really
but he's not coming to do that. He's coming
to
work in the booth
at Fox Sports
fastball.
Ohio.
However, he did
I'm
have
good.
A lot to say.
But why you were in baseball
about,
pants?
The Reds' current situation. 19
minutes
position.
After 4 o'clock. This is ESPN 15.
Well, I do know that it's open. I still believe long-term that Jose Garcia is going to be a monster. And, you know, my hope is that he is given enough time to develop. Obviously, we saw last year that he just wasn't quite offensively. I think he caught about everything that was hit his way. But, you know, he's still a young man and he's growing. What I'm excited about is the acquisition of a few older players, and one namely, simply because I've worked with him, is D. Gordon. I think D. Gordon, given the opportunity, can really help this team and this organization from first of all, a leadership standpoint. He's a outstanding young man. He's a family man and highly motivated. He was in a very tough situation this past season with the Seattle Mariners and didn't get much of an opportunity to play, but had a very positive impact on some of the young players in that organization. And I think coming from that situation, coming into a situation where there's an open opportunity, I truly believe that D. Gordon could play shortstop at the big league level. And a very good shortstop at the big league level, but he also could play a very good second base at the big league level, a very good center field at the big league level. He's just that kind of athlete. And these past two off seasons working out with D, he was hurt and injured. And it sounds like this is the D Gordon show, but it's not. I just know because this is the guy that I work with. I'm just excited about his opportunity to go out there and work with the organization, work with the team, help develop some of the younger talent, just be that leader that he is and that impact that he can be, regardless of where he is playing. I know that I think it was Kyle Holder that they signed from the Phillies with a former first round pick. And, you know, I hear that he is a good player, but I don't know him personally. I think that's his name. And, Kyle Farmer did a nice job this past season. I think the thing is when you have the middle of the infield is really important, obviously defensively, and consistency is really important. So my hope is that someone, whoever it is, gets an opportunity and is there for most of the year. You know, of course, you know, defensive replacement here or there is important. And there's so much shifting. Eugenio Suarez played shortstop. He was the de facto shortstop for a large percentage of the time due to the shift.
Somebody get on email.
So I just think that I'm excited about specifically about D. Gordon because I've worked with him for the past 10 years. I truly believe in him, and I'm excited about him and Nick Kroll signing him to possibly have an opportunity to be that guy to fill the slot until I believe Jose Garcia will be that guy. But there's also Alfredo Rodriguez is another guy that I think defensively can compete at the big league level right now. It's just a matter of if the bat is ready or not. So, and I know he had a great spring training this past year and or the year before, and it's just terrible that, you know, everything was disrupted by COVID. So I think there's some positive stuff, and it's not the stuff that people were writing about. It's not the, you know, the big price free agent guy, but trust me, we have some talent, and I'm excited to see who takes advantage of the opportunities out there.
That's my all-time favorite player, Barry Larkin, being added to the Fox Sports Ohio broadcast crew. You hear him talk about some of the younger players in the system, and as he was doing that, I thought back. I've probably talked about this before, and you know, folks who have gone to spring training and covered this team have shown you images of this and have written about this. But I went to spring training 2-3 years ago, and as a fan, and you have a chance to go back before the game is played and check out what's going on some of the backfields. And you always hear of, pretty much every team does it, they bring back legends. They bring back former players. And sometimes the role is kind of ceremonial. They're just there, but they're not really doing anything. And sometimes it's very, very hands-on. I watched Barry Larkin and three or four other prospects after their workout, after the practice, before the game. And he was drilling them and giving them like hardcore instruction and really being hands. It's cool to see. He has been somebody. I didn't love what I interpreted as him lobbying for Brian Price's job a couple of years ago. I feel like it was a fair interpretation, but I enjoyed watching him really be hands-on with prospects. And he's done that. He's, you know, he's been involved in this organization for a while, and not just a sort of ceremonial hood ornament. You know, I mean, he's actually been somebody who's been involved with development and instruction. And I'm looking forward to hearing about how that experience helps him as a broadcaster on Fox Sports Ohio. Do you have a Motel 6 commercial? This is Craig emailed us. Craig emails us all the time. He's a very loyal listener. We appreciate that. Can you give me the COVID guy again? The guy who's...
The mortgage crisis may not have the attention...
That's John Hope Bryant. I don't know who that is. No. The commercial we were making fun of before. Are you okay in there? Is everything all right? Is the board on fire? I don't want to make fun of that guy.
He's one of the first...
All right, well... See if you can get it, and we'll play it side by side with the Motel 6. Is everything okay? All right, it's 23 minutes away from 6. This is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. Don't forget, Cincy 360 is tomorrow, noon. At noon, it's a two-hour show now. Tony Pike hosts it. You usually get me in for a little while. It's a two-hour show. It was a one-hour show, and now it's a two-hour show, so you can be excited about that. The big thing in college basketball that everybody's losing their mind over is Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson is a kid who played for Duke this year who has chosen to leave. He's bolted. He's out. He's quit. He's left the program and chosen to prepare for the NBA draft, where many mock draft analysts, or many draft analysts who do mock drafts, I should say, have him as a potential lottery pick. He is shutting down his season. He played in 13 games for Duke. He averaged 11.2 points, 6.1 rebounds. He had three games that he missed with a foot injury, came back after that injury, and had a really good game in a game that Duke lost. And Duke's not very good this year, 24-16-4, the four being blocks. He has chosen to leave. And there's been this sort of semantic debate on social media about opt-out, quit, what the right verbiage here is. It's okay to say that he quit. He quit. I may have very good reasons for leaving this show right now, getting up in the middle of it. Chances are it would be better if I did. I might have very good reasons. If my wife called me and said, Mo, house is on fire, you got to get to the west side, I'm not going to tell her, well, I got to finish up the show. No, I'm going to leave, and then you will be able to say, Mo quit his show. He did it because his house is on fire. Not really sure what I could do. I don't drive a fire truck, but yes, I quit the show. This kid quit. I don't blame him. I don't blame anybody who, in a business where everybody is out for themselves, I don't blame anybody for looking out for themselves. And I really don't blame anybody for doing what they can to protect their most precious commodity. If it's going to enhance the ability to be successful down the road, and this kid's best commodity is his body. And there is sort of a formula here. If Duke is undefeated, this kid is not quitting. If they're going to the NCAA tournament, which they're probably not, this kid is probably not quitting. There is sort of a risk-reward thing here, and to whatever extent it pisses off his now former teammates, that's between him and his teammates. But I think the better way to look at this than through the lens of did he quit, did he screw his teammates, is this was a business transaction. And I hate, I don't like it when baseball writers refer to baseball as the industry. Kind of makes it seem cold and impersonal, right? But it is. I mean, it's an industry. They produce baseball games. It's an industry. It's a business. We might not like that it's a business, but it is. College basketball is a business. And I'm not that interested. I'm sure you aren't either in getting into a discussion about players being compensated. That's a debate that has really gone on since the beginning of college sports. But this is a business decision. Jalen Johnson, this young man, chose to go to Duke, and Duke chose to recruit him because they found it mutually beneficial, right? Jalen Johnson saw going to Duke as the best step for him to take to get to where he wants to go. He no longer sees use in continuing the relationship. And that's usually how business relationships come to an end. Usually amicably, I can't say amicably, usually with no hard feelings. But when two parties have no use for each other anymore, or when one party doesn't have use for the other anymore, there tends to be a disassociation, correct? You ever been in a business relationship and it served its purpose and now it's time to move on? I know, because the players aren't paid. And again, maybe you think they should be. Maybe you think they shouldn't be. Whatever. No one's going to change their mind on that, seemingly. But this kid went to Duke because he saw it in his best interests for getting to the NBA to go to Duke. That is completely okay. That doesn't mean that while you're there, you don't try to win as many games as possible, forge relationships with your teammates, try to achieve a common goal together. The common goal is not attainable. You go to Duke, maybe to get to the NBA, but you also go to play in the Final Four. Duke's not going to the Final Four. He is. I mean, they're not. Sorry. It's awesome that they're not, because it's fun when Duke stinks, but they're not. So what happens in a business relationship? It's no longer beneficial for us, and what we got into this relationship to accomplish is no longer attainable. It's time to say goodbye. And whatever the collateral damage is, that's between him and his teammates to sift through. I think we're getting too caught up in the semantics of the verbiage. Well, did he quit or did he opt out? The result's the same. What does it matter? Did he quit? Yes. He quit Duke basketball. But he quit it for the same reason that anybody ends a business relationship.
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late, come often.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And maybe this is an unfortunate and perhaps way too modern way of viewing things, but in the 21st century, these are business relationships, especially at the absolute upper ends of college basketball with the absolute most elite prospects. And I know there's a lot of Kentucky fans who love to think that these kids... not the ones on this year's team because they're not very good, but usually the really good players go to Kentucky because of all the long tradition and history of the Big Blue Nation, and there's dimensions of that. You get a great amount of exposure. You're going to play in front of a lot of people. It's a huge brand. But at the end of the day, they choose Kentucky because they view it in their best interest to go to UK to further what they want to do. And usually at Kentucky, there's a short-term goal that everybody can achieve and go to the NCAA tournament, play in a Final Four, maybe win a national championship. It's not going to happen this year. And who knows, maybe a UK player will quit. I wouldn't begrudge anybody for staying. I think it's cool when they stay. I'd be cool as hell if this kid's like, I'm going to stick it out with my teammates. But everybody's looking out for themselves, and these are business relationships. They are. It's a business relationship when the best player in the country goes to Kentucky. It is. It's a business relationship. I know that that doesn't necessarily mesh with this really sort of pseudo-pure vision that people have of college basketball, which if you're still looking at college basketball through that lens, you really need to get out of 1936. Because that might have been the last time it was ever pure. I've ever been in any kind of relationship. If it's no longer beneficial and you can no longer get out of it what you're putting into it, you leave it. Might be a marriage. Could be a friendship. Could be me and Jeff after I give him a stern talking to about not playing the commercial that I wanted to make fun of. He's going to opt out of filling in for Taryn. But no, I took it as that. The short-term goal is no longer attainable. And to get where I want to go long-term, I no longer need college basketball. So I'm leaving. Okay. Does it make him a bad guy? No. College basketball coaches move on from kids all the time. How many college basketball coaches I've heard talk about running kids off? It's no longer beneficial for that college basketball player to have that kid. Their mutual goals are no longer within range. So they move on. Do we say the coach quit the kid? We found a better opportunity for him. He helped him transfer. They run him off, and that's quitting the kid. Kid can't quit the player, or a kid can't quit the coach. Kid can't quit his teammates. By the way, I bet you every single one of that kid's teammates are like, yeah, it's cool. Whatever. We stink. Go do what you got to do, man. If I was as good as you, if I was a projected lottery pick, I would go do the same. I can't tell you how many times I've heard college basketball coaches talk about, yeah, we got to run this kid off. Got to figure it out. I'm not going to kick him off the team. And I've seen in instances where they've just basically told the kid, there is no room for you, leave. It is no longer beneficial for our program to have you. You got to go. Well, it might help you find a better landing spot, but you've got to go. That is a business transaction. That is the ending of the business relationship. College basketball programs are businesses. Sorry, I hope people get mad when you put them in those terms, but they are businesses. Somebody on one end of the business relationship chose to quit it. happens thousands of times a day in this country. All right, you got Motel 6 guy versus COVID commercial guy. No, we can't do it at all. Did you get a talking to? Did you get a phone call? Did you get a memo?
Not after what happened last time.
Oh, I'm just no confidence in yourself here? Is that the deal? I can appreciate that. The look you just gave me as I started to call for it was, I mean.
I have no confidence in the computer.
It's like handing the wheel to somebody who's never driven. The same look. Like, no, dude, don't make me do that.
All I'm right. told a good workman always blames his tools.
Yes, 100%. Or the producer. It is 13 minutes away from 6. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. just want to recap for you the break you just heard. Here's the weather forecast. Me reading an ad, weather forecast, for a different radio station, and now we're back. Let's see. Tomorrow on the show, Rick Boring from MusketeerReport.com is going to join us, as he does every Wednesday at 3:45, to talk both Xavier and NKU basketball. Always look forward to that. We are short tomorrow, done early at 5:30. We have UK Hoops. Wildcats, winners on Saturday against Auburn. In a game, they hung on to win by two. Davion Mintz with the three in the game's final minute. And tomorrow, the Wildcats and John Calipari will try to make it an actual winning streak. Two consecutive wins, perhaps. How about that? That'd be something. Kentucky hooking up tomorrow with Vanderbilt. That game will tip off at 7 p.m. By the way, there's I think it's in The Athletic. I should know that for sure because I work for The Athletic. There's an interesting piece in The Athletic about Jerry Stackhouse, the coach at Vanderbilt right now, who I guess enjoys fighting with fans on Twitter. It's like if Chad Brendel were a basketball coach, he'd be Jerry Stackhouse. Fighting with fans. I don't follow Jerry Stackhouse on Twitter. I have no reason to. If it was up to me, I wouldn't be on Twitter as much. But I read it and then listen to Vanderbilt and Kentucky tomorrow on ESPN 1530. The Commodores are awful, so Kentucky's probably going to win. 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776 at Mo Egger 1530. By the way, speaking of Twitter, is how you can follow me on that particular internet website, so do that. At Mo Egger 1530. We have spent a lot of time today talking about the Reds, and what's kind of interesting to me, and I've brought this up a couple of times over the last couple of days, is kind of working through how a lot of people felt about the Reds before last season and how a lot of people seem to feel about this team coming into this season and kind of the shifting in attitudes that people have towards it. We were talking about this, I was discussing this with Jeff before, about some of the offseason acquisitions last year. I wonder how many folks last season knew the name Mike Moustakas, knew that he had had a 30-home run season the year prior in Milwaukee, and thought the Reds were getting a better player than they were actually getting. That doesn't mean that Mike Moustakas was or is a bad player, but the Reds paid $16 million per season over 4 years to a guy who's pretty good, been an all-star a few times, but his overall numbers, pretty good. Addition, better than what they had, certainly capable of hitting the ball out of the yard, pretty good. But I don't know that you would have looked at his numbers last season and been, or before last season, and been overwhelmed. And so he has a year that's not super by any stretch, but in some respects, in a shortened season, was in line with what his production had been for the majority of his big league career. Mike Moustakas' career OPS is 753. Last year it was 799. Now, he had gone through a couple of the years where he was hurt, but in 2018, his OPS was 774. In 2016, his OPS was 801. A guy whose production was not that far a departure from what it was last year. I wonder if how folks feel about this team is perhaps a reflection of some overrating the additions to the extent that when those additions didn't perform to their level, now they think those additions simply aren't very good. Nick Castellanos was unbelievable after going from the Detroit Tigers to the Chicago Cubs in 2019. Granted, it didn't add up. His production didn't help them get to the postseason. But in about 50 games, he raked. OPS above 1,000. And if you go back when the Cubs played the Reds in a handful of games, he just tortured them. He was unbelievable. Nick Castellanos, in that year, hit 14 home runs over 2 months. Actually, 16 home runs over 2 months. But those 2 months were merely a great 2 months. He had, to that point in his career, been a productive hitter, a quality hitter, a guy certainly capable of hitting the ball out of the ballpark, a high strikeout hitter, but a good quality hitter. Last year, his batting average wasn't very high. He had 14 homers over 60 games, which is just off a 40 home run pace. His OPS was 784. At the time that he was traded to the Chicago Cubs, his OPS was 790. Now, he had some years where he was in the 800s prior to 2019. Last year with the Reds, it was 784. I wonder how much folks look at Nick Castellanos and thought, you know what, the Reds are getting an elite offensive player, a perennial all-star. Dude, never been an all-star before. They're getting an elite offensive player, and he didn't perform like an elite offensive player. And so it feels like, man, the Reds got a bum. Well, they didn't. They got a guy who is, in many respects, what he was last year. Even Shogo to a degree. Shogo Akiyama, and it was weird how they used him, not playing him at times against lefties. But when they acquired him, there was this sort of agreement. Okay, we're going to give this guy a chance to show what he can do, get used to this level, get used to the United States, get used to the American game, get used to the ball, get used to the pitchers. It's going to take some time, but, you know, then he's going to be able to take off. All right, how much time is it going to take? Maybe a third of the year. Okay. Well, about 40 games into last year, Shogo Akiyama started to get it, started to hit the ball to all fields, started to hit lefties, started to get on base. He's probably more reflective of what he was over those final 15 to 20 games than he was across those first 40 if you believe that it was going to take some time for him to get adjusted. The adjustment time is now supposed to be behind him. I had a lot of folks frustrated with Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel was as much of an unknown now as he was then last year. As much as we talked about him possibly being traded, he was probably going to be on the team, a team that a lot of people thought was going to be really, really good. If you weren't going to hold last year's team, if you weren't going to hold the fact that Nick Senzel was unproven against last year's team, how can you hold it against them this year? Feels like many people still are. It's 4 minutes away from 6. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Long Neck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.